Hey, welcome to the Foundry Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to hear future messages. We hope you're blessed and encouraged by this message today.
All right. Good morning, you guys. Yeah, we should clap. That was a pretty cool video. Huh? Hey, way to go. Despite the snow, I'm feeling a rhyme coming on. You're here, and that's the end of my rhyme. But way to go! You're here, despite the snow. Thanks for being here. This is historic. Now, we've been over the top in our verbiage. We're like, it's historic. It's going to be epic. And it is, starting this Sunday. And the reason is because we're really going to drill down into what God's vision, the vision that he's given us as a church. So it's not just about 4.3 acres where we're building building and going to be raising money for that. It's about so much more. So Brandon mentioned this in his announcement video. If everyone get one of these, okay, if you didn't, if you're like, yeah, my spouse picked one up. No, everyone means everyone. Men, women, husbands, wives, children, infants, everybody. Everybody gets one. And the reason is because it's more than a kind of a layout of the vision of Foundry and what we're doing and what we're doing with the property. But there's more in here. And skip those. I'm going to go back to the Advent offering in just a second. But on page 30, you'll see it says at the top, Sunday, February 4th. That's today. How about that? So the first message, Building in Vain, that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So there's room to take message notes here. And then on page 31, opposite page, is the reading for the week. And so this is our D group journal for the next 6 weeks. And each week's reading will relate to the message that was on that topic. And so we want you to bring this every Sunday and use it during the week and take it to your D group. This should look beat up after the next 6 weeks. So we're excited. There's a lot of prayer and a lot of work that went into this, so we want you to utilize it. Now, there's a beautiful picture of our land on the front of it, and so you guys know the drill. We paid $1.65 million for that land. We put $1 million down. We financed $650 with the seller, and so we're like, you know what? The first goal that we have is to pay off this land, which is $650,000, so that's a massive goal. That's way more than you can raise in 2 months, but we decided, hey, let's just go for it. And so our goal was $650, and then here's what we brought in, you guys. This is a huge victory for us. Go to the next slide, John. This we brought in $248,600. That's huge. So like that's the most that's the biggest Advent offering by far that we've ever brought in. So thank you. Thank you for those of you who gave sacrificially and faithfully and generously. So we're excited. So that gives us a huge, huge jump start on getting that land paid off. So so this morning we're going to talk about building in vain or building not in vain. We don't want to build in vain. And so we're this is really where the vision of more began with Foundry Church. And years ago, when I first came to Foundry, this summer will be 7 years ago. Hard to believe. By the way, those of you who've come in the last 3 years don't know who just led for us, but that was Mark Thomas. Mark was our worship pastor for a number of years before Jeffrey came. So let's give it up for Mark. And Judy, his better half, is sitting right next to him. And Judy was heavily, heavily involved. And man, you guys are special to us. So it's awesome to have you here on this special day as we kick off this series. So so let's look at our theme verse. And you'll note on the notes page there, there's a theme verse and then there's a central truth. Let's read those. So theme verse for this morning, Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food, for he grants sleep to those he loves. I was in a gathering and somebody posed the question, will there be sleep in heaven? Will we need to sleep in heaven? And you know what my answer to that is? Well, I'm pretty sure God loves those who are in heaven. That means we get to sleep in heaven, because sleep is a glorious thing. Now, if you're like, no, sleep is not, it's interrupted. Listen, the sleep that we're going to have in heaven, it's going to be peaceful. It's going to be solid, a good solid 8 to 9 hours, maybe 10 if it's a rainy or snowy night where you could really just sleep through a thunderstorm. So that's part of one of the gifts of God. At any rate, what is this verse saying? It's saying, you know what? There's a lot of stuff you can do, but if you do it without the Lord being central, then you're doing it in vain. It really doesn't matter. All kinds of stuff we can do. But if God isn't in it, it's in vain. And so as we embark on this journey of building, you know, we want to make sure that our priorities and that our values are all very much aligned with Jesus at the very center of what we're doing. Otherwise, even though it's good work and even though it's, quote, church work, it could be done in vain if he's not front and center of everything. And so here's the truth. And so this goes beyond, you know, our plans for literally building a campus here in Castle Pines. It goes into our lives. And so as we go through each of these weeks, this morning included, I want you to think in terms of your life. And then also think in terms of the life of Foundry Church, because both of these are very much connected, and they're slightly different application. And we don't want to miss the personal application and just think about, as a church, how do we, you know, build for more? But we want to think individually as well. How do I build my life? And so the central truth is that we're all building our lives. But the question is, what are we building them for? Are we building something that will last, something that is eternal? Or are we like King Solomon, who we're going to look at this morning, who pursued and obtained every possible human desire, yet concluded that it was all meaningless and chasing after the wind? And so we're all going to build our lives. We're all going to live lives in pursuit of something. And how terribly sad to get to the end of our lives and realize, man, I pursued the wrong things. We've all heard the analogy, you know, you climb the corporate ladder only to realize that it's leaning against the wrong building. Like you do all this work and then you're like, wow, I've arrived in a place where I'm still not happy. So this is it's foundational. This whole message is about purpose. It's about meaning in life, and it's super foundational for us as a church, but it's also foundational for each of us as individuals. This answers the why question. Like in this book, there's a lot of what. What are we going to build? What? But far more important than the what is why. What is the why behind it, and what is the why behind our lives? And so Solomon, who most believe wrote at least most of the book of Ecclesiastes. There's some people think that it could have been a different king of Israel. Some think that it was somebody that knew about Solomon's life, so sort of wrote in his things that Solomon would have written. And there's also another character in the book of Ecclesiastes called the teacher. Some think these are one and the same. I'm among those. I think King Solomon is the teacher or the preacher that is introduced to us. Because so much of what he shares in the book of Ecclesiastes, it connects directly with what we know about his life. And so we're gonna draw some principles from King Solomon's search for meaning. And so the first thing, we're going to look at three things primarily, that we discover as we begin to read through Ecclesiastes, and that's going to be our reading this week. Will be the book of, now, if you've been around Foundry, you're a veteran, like you've read it already. But as we've said before, what do we do with the Word of God? Well, it's living and active, and it's sharper than a double-edged sword, so I read it, and I keep reading it, and God shows us more things and new things, and we'll get a word in due season as we read it. So, but here's the first kind of lesson or principle, and that is that everybody needs meaning and purpose in their lives. Not just the scholar, not just the philosopher, not just the deep thinker who smokes his pipe and thinks deeply about things. We all know that there are those types, and they're always probing, like, why? You know, they approach life from a philosophical point of view. And then there's others, like if you were to look at Brandon and me, Brandon would be the philosopher. He's read all of, there would be like blue collar Tim, like just go to work and get your job done, and just do the right thing, and not a lot of grappling with why. But the reality is, whether it is your tendency to question why and to ask deep questions and to wrestle with things, or just to accept them, the reality is every one of us need meaning and purpose. There needs to be a why. There needs to be a reason why we get up in the morning and live lives in the way that we do. And so when we begin to read Ecclesiastes, we immediately see Solomon's need for meaning. And so let's just begin to read. It says, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem." This is the NIV. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." Now, if you have like an old King James version, it'll say, "Vanity of vanities. Everything is vanity. It has no meaning." The word in the Hebrew is this word hevel. So it's hevel, hevel. Everything is hevel. If you're Hebrew, you hevel. You use the back of your throat. Hevel. So what is hevel? Well, Solomon uses it 38 times. And the Hebrew meaning is like smoke or vapor. And the idea is, it's something that is temporary and fleeting. It's there for a moment, and then it disappears. And by the way, this is James in James chapter 4. He says, "What is your life? It's a mist that appears, and then it vanishes. It's gone." And so it's not just that it's meaningless. It's like you can't get your... Solomon couldn't get his arms around what life was all about. Like, what is the meaning? What is the purpose? He'd think that he found it, and it would like look solid, and he'd grasp it, and he comes up with a fistful of air. It's vapor. It's smoke. It's mist. It's fog. And so there's this idea that it's temporary. It's fleeting, and then it's an enigma. There's like a paradox. And we'll see as we read through Ecclesiastes, Solomon wrestles with all the paradoxes of life, things that just like don't make sense. And so, it looks substantive, but it's not. And so, it's not just that it's meaningless, it's that you can't figure, Solomon couldn't figure out what life really was about. That was his wrestle. And so we begin to read a little bit more about his great need for meaning. Verse 3, let's just continue reading in chapter 1. "What do people gain from all their labor at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets, and it hurries back to where it rises. And the wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes. Everything returning on its course." You're thinking about the old Rat song, "Round and Round," aren't you, guys? No, I'm the only. Yeah, there's a few 80s rock guys back there that are. "All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than anyone can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun." You know, we think all of our technology, well, surely that's new. I don't know. Watch Ancient Aliens. This technology's been here before. I'm sure it's all true what they say on there. No, but they're like truly, like, we still don't know how they built the pyramids. Like, what kind of technology was utilized? I mean, so Solomon's like, listen, it's been here before, right? "Is there anything new in which we can say, look, here's something new? It was already here long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. And I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, chasing after the wind." Man, that's kind of cynical, isn't it? It's kind of sad that he's like there. It's like, Nothing's new. No, you can't tell me anything that hasn't already been stated again. The reality is it's all meaningless. So Solomon's like, there's this need for meaning and purpose, and he couldn't figure it out. Which leads us to the second thing, and that is that like trying to grasp the wind, purpose and meaning are elusive. So Solomon begins to test things, and he begins to pursue all kinds of things in this desire for meaning, and we might even use the word satisfaction, and like a sense of understanding, and like this is what life's about. So Solomon, he starts trying all kinds of stuff, and his search is not unlike ours. Every one of us in here have searched out these things to some extent. And so the first area is wisdom and knowledge. He's like, that's where you get a sense of meaning, is you collect wisdom and you grow in knowledge and you get to a point where you sort of like have it figured out. And so he says, I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who's ruled over Jerusalem. Remember Solomon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream and he said, Solomon, you know, ask whatever you wish. And remember Solomon asked for wisdom. And so the Bible tells us that he was the wisest man that ever lived. He had all kinds of knowledge about all kinds of things. And so he says, I had more wisdom than anyone who's ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned this too is a chasing after a wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. I guess that's where we get our ignorance is bliss. Sometimes it's just good to be dumb and happy. Like the more I know, the more depressed I get. So Solomon's like, the more wisdom I get, the more I know and the more grief. And so he didn't find the answer for purpose. He didn't get purpose and meaning out of all of his knowledge, out of all of his learning. That was a dead end. Then he sought pleasure. He said, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? And the next verse, he talks about drinking wine. And so it's like you could lump in pleasure and, you know, wine, which, you know, supposedly gladdens the heart, but you drink too much of it and you're over in the toilet puking and like, you know, people, this is so much, like, think about our culture. And sometimes it's because of a lack of meaning that people just turn to drugs and alcohol, or the only meaning that they can determine isn't worth living for. And so it's just the pursuit of pleasure. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So it's like, hey, just get what you can out of this life. It's the hedonistic view of life. What is life about? It's just about getting as much pleasure as you can, because you're going to die. So just get all you can. But Solomon said, this doesn't accomplish anything. It left him empty. And then he turned to work and accomplishments. This is the American way right here. I will find meaning and purpose in work and in achievements and in excelling in my field. So he says, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs and water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. And he's going to go on. He's in the mid-sentence here, but he's going to go on and he's going to say it's meaningless. It means nothing. And of course, we read about Solomon's great accomplishments in Kings and in Chronicles, where we learn, you know, these hanging gardens and just unbelievable. And oftentimes we see this as people gain wealth, then you have to spend your money on something. So then you throw yourself into projects and you're going to build a new house or you're going to remodel a house and you're going to make it nicer. And then you do that and you're like, well, what now? And then I'll turn outside. I'll do a landscaping and I'll put pools and all kinds of beautiful landscaping. And the reality is what Solomon experiences every time he would finish a project that he thought, man, my house is set. Like I got my outdoor kitchen, and like everything's good. I got the herds out in the fields. Like I'll get to a point where I'm like, now this is living. And he would get there and he'd go, still like miserable. Like, this doesn't make me happy. Now, I know that when we see stories of people in Hollywood, we see that the dream can come true and you can become rich and famous and you're totally happy, right? Isn't that the story that we get from our famous people, that they're just so happy. They're just so satisfied. They've discovered the meaning of life. I mean, most of them, it's rare to see somebody that's got some kind of grip on reality that's become rich and famous, that they've discovered some that's an illusion. And if they look to it for meaning and purpose, it bankrupts their very soul. So work and accomplishments, that didn't do it. And then wealth and power, I amassed silver and gold for myself, and treasure of the kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers, a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me, and all my wisdom stayed with me. So he had wealth and he had power, he had prestige, he had a position, he had everything. Like if you could describe what would be a successful life, Solomon had achieved it all. And then kind of wrapping it all up, everything his eyes desired. What could Solomon have? Whatever he wanted. Whatever he wanted. And so he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So whatever he wanted, he had. Wouldn't we think, hey, if I could have whatever I wanted, surely I'd be happy, right? Because as the desire bubbled up, I would just have it. Because I desired it, I could have it. And that was Solomon. Everything. And yet, even with that kind of ability to get what he wanted, he still found it a mystery, a puzzle, an enigma. He thinks he had it, and it's vapor and it escapes. So the question that we should ask ourselves then is, why did his pursuits not bring him satisfaction? Why wasn't that enough for him? And more importantly, why don't they bring us satisfaction? I think the latest polls are out. Douglas County is the eighth wealthiest county in the country this year. I think we're number eight. I mean, we live in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, in one of the top wealthiest counties. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody in here is in that, but we live around and in the midst of incredible wealth, where people have more. They have more of mostly whatever they want. They can afford more of it. And so that's really where the vision for Foundry came in. God planted this church in Castle Pines, Colorado, 25 years ago, in the midst of a growing area exploding with people that were go-getters. They were top of the class. They were the A-list. They're the achievers. They're the top tier in our society. They know how to make money. They're incredibly gifted. They're driven. They know what they want and they go after it, and everybody has more. And yet it's not the kind of more that really satisfies. It can be a blessing, and we'll talk about there can be meaning that we draw from it when God has his place in it, but without the Lord in it, it's all vanity. Vanity of vanities. And so why no satisfaction? Well, when we read through Ecclesiastes, there's at least three things that kind of bubble to the surface as to why didn't it satisfy Solomon, and why doesn't it satisfy us? The first one is this. This is a real happy point. Make sure and write it down. It's death. Death. that pesky reality that everyone is going to die. That is the looming reality. Everyone dies. And so no matter how much you have, you don't get to keep it because you're going to die. And Solomon didn't like this. He says, the wise have eyes in their heads while the fool walks in darkness, but I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless, for the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. So death. Death has a way of really throwing a wet blanket on the party, doesn't it? Because life goes by, and you're like, well, I got a lot of years to live. Well, we all know how that goes by. Like that, you know? It just, time flies. And it's like, it's over. And we're going to talk about, in a moment, it's not just death, but it's what comes after death. The Bible says it's been appointed unto man once to die, and after that, to face the judgment. And that's exactly where King Solomon is going to lead us. He's like, hey, here's the deal. You're going to die, and you're going to stand before God and give an account for your life. So let that bring some meaning and some purpose to your life. That's where he's going to end. I'm giving you the end at the middle here. That's where he's going to end. Because death is such a looming reality for all of us. And if you're not preparing for death, you're a fool. If you're not preparing to be buried 6 feet in the ground, and if you're not preparing your family for that, and if you're not living in light of your own mortality, then you're living like a fool because it's rushing at you like a locomotive. And the reality is, none of us know how long we have. We don't know how, you know, I may get out on this treacherous roads and die this afternoon. Or the Lord may give me another 35 years. Either way, it's like a vapor. It's here and it's gone. It goes by so fast. And so death has to inform the purpose and the meaning for which we that brings to our life. The second thing that Solomon really wrestled with was injustice. Life is just unfair and it doesn't make any sense. So he says, in this meaningless life of mine, you gotta love this, in this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. There's something else meaningful. This is chapter 8. There's something else meaningless that occurs on earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too is meaningless. And then, of course, in part of the wisdom literature is the book of Job, where Job goes through all this suffering, and we learn that just because you live a righteous life doesn't mean that you will not suffer. And so, it wasn't like for Solomon things added up. Oh, okay, I get it. The meaning of life is to just do this, be a righteous person, and then I'll be rewarded for my righteousness in this life, and that means I'll have a good life and I'll feel a sense of accomplishment and meaning. And he's like, what I observed is really, really good people suffer what seems unjustly. And that makes me feel like life is random and there is no meaning and there is no purpose. And maybe we just evolved from primates, and the answer to the question of meaning in life is none. There is none. You're going to die and you're going to go into the dirt and that's it. And it's going to roll on and on. So that's what Solomon wrestled with. And this is what people wrestle with. People in Douglas County wrestle with this. Some of you wrestle with this. Death is looming, injustice, and then this isn't all of them, but the third one is the seemingly cruel inability to be satisfied by anything or anybody. The seemingly cruel inability to be satisfied by anything. Look what he says. I've seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavy on mankind. God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor so that they lack nothing their hearts desire. But God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them. And strangers enjoy them instead. This is meaningless. A grievous evil. He's like, some people, they got what it takes to make a lot of money. And they reach this pinnacle of success. But yet God doesn't give them the ability. They can't enjoy it. All they know is to work, 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 and yet it never really makes them satisfied. And it's like this inability. And it's true. There's an inability. In fact, Solomon says, related to money, in Ecclesiastes 5, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. Imagine if you could go back and tell your 20-year-old self what you make right now. You'd be like, at 20-year-old, you'd be like, I'm gonna be satisfied. It's all relative, right? Brandon will be proud of me for this. I'm gonna quote C.S. Lewis, his favorite author. C.S. Lewis says this: if we find ourselves with the desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world. Wow. Pretty profound and pretty true. The reality is we're made for a different world. We're made for not things or somebody, but someone, and that is the Creator. And so that leads us to this final third point of the message, and that is that created things will never satisfy us. Only our Creator can. Created things, no matter what they are. And we're talking about things and people, created things, creation. And this is what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 1, that when he's kind of indicting mankind, he says we traded the worship of created things instead of the Creator. And we always look at the creation and we think, that'll satisfy. That relationship will satisfy. That job will satisfy. This project will give me meaning. That job, that career, that's what will really settle the ache inside me. And the reality is all of those are created things. They weren't made to satisfy me. I wasn't made for them. I was made to enjoy them, but not to draw meaning and purpose and significance. That's only the Creator. And so Solomon, in the last chapter, he writes this incredible poem, and it's really a metaphor of aging. There's all kinds of profound metaphors in here. We'll identify the obvious ones as we go through them, but here's what he says. This is the last chapter of Ecclesiastes. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach where you will say, I find no pleasure in them. So he's like, when you're young, you know, you haven't gotten cynical yet. You haven't gotten to try everything yet. You think all these things will satisfy you. He's like, if you could remember your Creator while you're young, before you get to the point where you can find no pleasure, it will be good for you. And so he says, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain and the keepers of the house tremble, he's describing a man or a woman losing their sight as they age. When the keepers of the house tremble, when an old person can't even hold their hand still, they shake. And the strong man stoop. When the grinders cease because they are few. That's your teeth. Starting to lose your teeth. Yeah, that's right. You're going to lose your teeth. You can put in dentures, but, you know, they'll be sitting on the dresser when your family gathers around you, when you are passing, and they're sitting on the dresser. Or maybe in the, what do you put dentures in? Like some fizzy stuff that cleans them? Yeah, you gotta keep them clean. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop and the grinders cease because they are few and those lacking and those looking through the windows grow dim. Again, loss of sight. When the doors of the street are closed and the sound of the grinding fades, when the people rise up at the sound of birds, but all of their songs grow faint. That you'll notice I'm well on my way to deafdom with my hearing aids in here. When people are afraid of heights and the dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags himself along and desire no longer is stirred, you can imagine what that might be a reference to right there. There are products that can postpone that a little bit, but Still in the end, man, you're like a grass. You're like, I'll never lose my desire. Yeah, you will. You're going to get old. Your teeth will be on the dresser, and you'll be dragging yourself around. These people go to their eternal home, and mourners go about the streets. Remember him. So here it is. Remember him. Remember who? Remember your Creator. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything's meaningless. If we don't remember our Creator when we're young, life will never, ever make sense. And we'll get old, and we'll go the way of everyone that's gone before us. We'll return to the dust. From dust we came, and dust will return. It's hard to tell somebody when they're young, live in light of your impending death, because it's a long ways away. But that's what Solomon says. He says, remember your Creator. Don't live as if you're God. And don't just think about creation. Remember your Creator, because you're going to go meet him when this short life of yours ends. And so there are three keys that Solomon kind of gives us for unlocking the mystery of meaning. We just stated the first one, that is, remember your Creator. This keeps everything in perspective. By the way, we'll read, as we read through Ecclesiastes, we'll see that Solomon goes, you know what? I've discovered that there's nothing better than to enjoy one's work and to find meaning and pleasure in it. And then he'll say, you know what? It's good to eat and drink and enjoy a good meal. Like, you know what? That there's some meaning in that. But it's like, yes, because God created all things for our enjoyment, the scripture says. So it's like, as long as God, I'm remembering my Creator, and he's first, and he's front and center, well, then I can have a sense of pride, good kind, and significance from my work. And we should have a job that is somewhat meaningful to us. But if I'm looking for absolute meaning from it, no way. And to sit and enjoy a meal with my wife and to laugh together when we're watching a movie. Ah, I can enjoy that because I'm not looking. It doesn't bring ultimate meaning to my life, but it is a blessing of the Lord. So I find purpose in it, but not purpose from it. If that makes sense. Purpose in it, not from it. And so remember your Creator. Remember your Creator. And then number two is fear him. And these two go together, and keep his commands. Fear him and keep his commands. Now this is how Solomon ends. This is just a few verses down from his poem about getting old. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. That's the duty of man. Remember your Creator. He created us for him, to be in relationship with him. Fear him. Respect him. Yield to him. Submit to him. And obey his commandments. And, you know, we know this side of Jesus that we can't obey his commandments, but Jesus fulfilled his commandments perfectly and paid the price for our sin, which we're going to remember in just a moment as we take the Lord's Supper. But before we get there, this is what brings meaning and significance to life, because because this is huge. This is massive. What is the duty of man? To obey God's commands. Well, what are God's commands? Well, we have a Bible full of them. It relates to all areas of our life, and so it's sweeping in its effect on our lives. You're like, that seems kind of narrow. No, it's amazingly, massively broad. It's like, obey the commands of God. Which commands? Yeah, all of his commands. How does he want you to operate in your marriage? How does he want you to handle your finances? How does he want you to work when you're on the job? How does he want you to take care of your body? And what kind of words should we speak and not speak? And what kind of attitude should we have as we go through life? All of that is, okay, God, how do you want me to live? And this is the meaning. This is where meaning is found. And so you're like, well, Pastor Tim, I thought we were talking about Foundry. And what is Foundry's purpose in all this? Here's the way that we get at this here at Foundry. This is the verbiage that we use. Our way of saying what Solomon said here that we've unpacked is simply that we've been made for more. We're made for more. What is more? Well, you guys have it in your booklet here. You can open up to what page is it? I've got it on my notes. What is it? Page 6 and 7. Page 6 and 7. Grab that open. Now, if you've been around Foundry very long at all, you know this. But MORE is an acronym, and it stands for, we're made for a meaningful relationship with God through Christ. That's remember your Creator. We're made to put others first and to be radically generous and to be engaged fully in family, in both our biological families and our church family. We're made for those relationships. That's our way of saying it. There's a lot of ways to say it. This isn't, you know, that what matters is the substance behind it, not the way that we organize it and say it. But that's what we mean when we're made for more. It means we're made for so much more than just gaining wisdom and gaining material possessions and finding power and prestige and all these things that Solomon looked to and said they're a dead end. And so we're made for more. And so this gets at why we're building. And if you look at the next page, page 8 and 9, it just says this, why are we building? Well, we're building to help increasing numbers of people discover and develop the right kind of more. We want increasing numbers of people to know how they can have meaning and purpose in life, and to prepare them for their inevitable death and judgment before the Creator. That's what we're about. So the vision isn't a building. The building's just a means to accomplishing the vision. And so we just want to keep this front and center. And so over the next 6 weeks, there's a couple things I want to ask of you. If you call Foundry home, on page 23, there's a list of things. We're not going to go through them all. I don't want to overwhelm you on day one. But here's some basic commitments that I would just encourage you over the next 6 weeks. One is just try to attend weekly. Just come weekly, because every one of these messages is going to be important. And if you're like, yeah, I know what meaningful relationship with Christ is. I know what putting others for. I know all that. Well, come anyway. It'll encourage somebody else who maybe isn't honed in. And what I find is I cannot over-focus on these things, because all I have to do is focus a little bit and I come under a good kind of conviction that goes, oh yeah, Tim, you're looking, buddy, for meaning and satisfaction and things that aren't ever, they're not going to satisfy you. You got to keep your eyes on this. And all of us need regular reminders and encouragement to remember the right thing. So attend weekly and engage in this daily reading. I want to encourage you this week, read through those, through the Ecclesiastes passages, and then there's some questions for your own reflection and also for D group discussion, which leads to the third thing I would ask, and that is join a D group. Join a D group, because it is always better to process this with a group of people. So if you're not in a group, as Brandon said in the announcements, man, that you can sign up online, out at the table. I think Nathan's going to be out there. He'd love to help you get connected in a group. We have groups meeting different times, different places. As I'm looking out here, most of you are already in a group. Way to go, Foundry. If you're not, jump in one and process this with other people. And let me end with this scripture right here, and then we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. The commitments that I just asked you, you might look at them and go, well, that's a bit much for me. Well, call it labor, and your labor in the Lord is never, never in vain. It actually has deep meaning and significance and purpose.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And if you did, make sure to share it and subscribe so that we can get you all of these new messages as soon as they're available. I also want to take a moment and thank all of you who are a part of Foundry. Whether you support us financially or serve with us or just share these messages, it's because of you that we're able to make a difference. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.